Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Platte Woods Church, both here in this room and for those of you worshiping with us online. My name is Evie Martin. I'm the lead pastor here. And today is such a special and exciting day because on this day in 1809, Robert Fulton patented the steamboat. Isn't that incredible? Something worth celebrating. Today is also really special because it is National Guitar Day. Congrats to all you guitar players out there. Not only that, today is National Inventors Day. It's International Day of Women and Girls in Science. It's Grandmother Achievement Day. Hooray for grandmothers! The internet also tells me it is Man Day. Lord only knows what that means. But ironically, it's also Satisfied Staying Single Day. And it's National Make a Friend Day. What a day! I feel like there's something else, though. Something I'm missing. What am I missing? Our Chiefs take to the field tonight to dominate the 49ers. I can't think of anything else more important than that today, except for church. So thank you all for being here this morning. Super Bowl 58 will be epic, there is no doubt. The cheapest tickets available, last I checked, and it was not for me, it was for sermon research, were running a little over $5,000 a piece. A 30-second ad can be yours for a cool $7 million. Yen. The winners of tonight's game will each take home $164,000 in pocket change. Sadly, the losers only take home $89,000. All in a day's work, you know? I might be in the wrong career. The Super Bowl event as a whole will generate an estimated $16.5 billion in consumer spending. We are all included in that, of course, already. I see all of your gear that you're wearing. Like, you have contributed to this problem. All the snacks, all the food you've purchased, if you haven't already. We are the consumers spending. The two individuals drawing the most attention this afternoon, arguably, hold net worths, respectively, of $40 million, that'd be Travis, and wait, let me count these zeros, $1.1 billion, that'd be Taylor. So, I can't think of any day better than Sunday, February 11th, Super Bowl Sunday, to talk about money. Last Sunday, we started this two-part series by setting the baseline that generosity isn't just random acts of giving here and there. Generosity is a way of life. It is the way of life that Jesus invites us to when it comes to our money and our possessions. And so just to recap last week quickly, for generosity, in order for it to become that way of life for us, that means that it is a daily choice that we make. What we do with a little is what we do with a lot, so generosity can begin at any time. And we need to start asking ourselves not, what can I do with this money, but what can this money do? So these shifts in our mindset lead us toward living the more generous way of life that Jesus invites us to. Today, I'm going to tell you a story. It's a story that Jesus told in the Gospel of Luke. He's speaking in front of a massive crowd, thousands, the previous verses tell us. And one man manages to catch his attention. Maybe he's close to the front of the crowd. Maybe he's got a really loud voice. Maybe he took off his shirt and climbed down out of the suite. But the man is having some feelings about money. It seems there is a conflict with his brother about an inheritance, and things are not getting divvied up fairly. One brother had more Super Bowl rings than the other, something. He wants Jesus to fix it and tell his brother to divide the inheritance. Inheritances are tricky business, aren't they? Whatever is left behind can really mess up a family. Even close, loving families can manage to wound one another over the stuff that gets parceled out after a death. Maybe you've experienced this in your own family. But this man in Luke chapter 12 wants Jesus to do something about this inequity. Jesus quickly and clearly shuts down that request. In the original Greek, I think it reads something like, "This is not my problem, man." Loose translation. He dismisses the specific issue of the inheritance at hand, but he goes on to address the bigger issue that lies underneath. He turns then to the whole crowd of thousands of people, because this part is important enough for everyone to hear. And this is what he says, Luke chapter 12. Watch out, guard yourself against all kinds of greed. After all, one's life isn't determined by one's possessions, even when someone is very wealthy. And then he told them a parable. A certain rich man's land produced a bountiful crop, and he said to himself, "What will I do? I have no place to store my harvest." Then he thought, "Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. That's where I'll store all my grain and goods. I'll say to myself, 'You have stored up plenty of goods, enough for several years. Take it easy. Eat, drink, enjoy yourself.'" But God said to him, "Fool, tonight you will die. Now who will get the things you have prepared for yourself?" This is the way it will be for those who hoard things for themselves and aren't rich toward God. Here's a guy with a lot of stuff, so much stuff, he has no place to put it. He makes a plan to tear down the barns he has and quickly build bigger ones so he can put his lot of stuff in them. It sounds like the man had plenty of stuff even before this story. After all, he already had the barns. He was used to storing a harvest, probably plenty to live on. And the text starts off by describing him as rich. Jesus seems to be saying here that the problem is this man is confused about who all this stuff is really for. He's already rich. He gets even richer. He stashes it all away, and that is when God calls him a fool. "You've prepared all of these things for you and you alone to enjoy. What do you think is going to happen to them tomorrow when you don't wake up?" The rich man has misunderstood who all this stuff belongs to. He has believed the myth that was handed to him, the myth that is handed to all of us, the myth of ownership. He believed that all that came to him belonged to him, that it was for him. And we hear Jesus beginning to deconstruct this myth right in the very first sentence of the parable. It's very subtle, but listen to what he says, how he phrases it. "A certain rich man's land produced a bountiful crop." Who are my grammarians in the room? Anybody still do grammar? What is the subject of the sentence? A certain rich man's land produced a bountiful crop. The land is doing the action. The man has no agency in this sentence. The land is what has produced the bountiful crop. The man simply received the gift and then stashed it all away. We see then a bit of a bookend to this parable as Jesus tells it. It begins with the land being bountiful and abundant and rich toward the man. And then it ends with the man failing to be rich toward God. And the point in all of it is that the man owns none of it. Ownership is the myth. Any of you own anything? A house, a car, a business, the clothes you're wearing, a barn full of stuff? Yeah, we all do. We worked hard to make money. That money is ours. We spent that money on things we wanted, and now those things are ours. We own them. At least that's the language we use. But let me ask you this. Can any of those things be taken away from you? Can all of them? If they can be taken away, we don't own them. We manage them. Years ago, while I was in seminary, long before I had kids, we lived in Atlanta. We had bought a house. We owned one car, no payments. It was ours. And beyond that, we didn't have much of value to speak of. One Sunday evening after youth group at church, I was working as a youth pastor at the time, we came home to find our side door pushed in and our house ransacked and robbed. Now, the upside to the story is that very little was taken because we didn't have anything valuable. They had taken my laptop out of its bag and then shoved it back in because it was so old. Same with the desktop computer. They found a few pieces of jewelry and they took all the red wine but left the whites. So while the insurance claim check was not very large, if you've ever had anything stolen from you, you know the feelings connected to it are large. These are things you owned that belonged to you. Whether they have inherent value or not, you no longer own them. They are gone. And generally, there's very little you can do. And while no one likes to be robbed, no one enjoys having things taken from them, when it happens, once you get through the shock and the trauma of it, we're forced to reflect on our notion of ownership. We start asking questions that are like what Jesus is asking here. What was your relationship with all that stuff? What was it doing for anyone else? Did you think you owned it? Now that you don't, how are you doing? You can't take it with you anyway. The landowner's big problem was that he believed the abundance that the land produced was for him. It never occurred to him, until God called him a fool, that his role was to manage this abundance. Otherwise, it meant nothing to anyone except that he was rich and greedy. When every gift is kept for the self, the end result is greed, not generosity. So to take to heart this parable of the rich man and his barns, we too need to examine the myth of ownership in our own lives. Do we also believe that everything that comes to us is for us? Or can we begin to look at our barns of stuff, or maybe closets or bank accounts, and think about the contents as the stuff we are managing while we walk this earth? Instead of believing that what comes to me belongs to me, could we ask, what will I have to show for all that comes my way? To make this shift, Jesus indicates to the rich man, and so to us, that the turn away from our instincts of hoarding and greed is found in generosity. The opening of the barn door, rather than the building of bigger barns, is what moves us in the right direction. I was recently in a meeting with Ryan Hudnall. He's the executive director of Della Lamb Community Services. We partner with them as a church. And the group was talking about fundraising and the importance of philanthropy for nonprofits. They were in the process of hiring their new development director. So we were talking about how giving is obviously important and essential for the organization itself. But it's also transformational for the giver. And Ryan, who has a knack for putting words together in very striking ways in his ordinary speech, offered this simple conviction. And we're sitting in the meeting, and I wrote down exactly what he said because it was so powerful. He said, generosity is how we fight against the heart's captivity to greed. We fight against the heart's captivity to greed. Can't you just see it? Our hearts bound, locked up, scrunched and stymied by chains of greed, captive. It's just the way of things. It seems so hopeless and inescapable, but there is a way. There is a way for our beating, brave hearts to fight back, to escape, to be free, and the way is generosity. So how? How do we get there? How do we move from our heart's captivity to greed and the myth of ownership to Jesus' way of generosity? We could make a long list of practical steps to get there, and we just started a class called Saving Grace on Wednesday nights that will give you far more pragmatic advice than I can do in 20 minutes. You can still jump into that class again on February 21st, but if this time around doesn't work, we will be doing it again throughout the year. But for today, I want to leave you with something you can do. To begin, reorder your money moments this month. Whenever the month starts for you, whenever the paychecks come, reorder your money moments. The normal order of things that most of us fall into is live, save, give. It's kind of what we do by default. Money comes in, the mortgage payment goes out, we go to the grocery store, credit card bills are paid, the new shoes that I was eyeing go into the shopping cart. We start with spending the money that we need to live. And then out of what is left, we might put some away. We save. We build up a little cash reserve if we can. We invest for the future. We save up for the larger purchase coming down the road. And then at the very end, if anything remains, we might consider giving it away, or we might not, because it might just cover the handbag to go with the cute new shoes. Our money goes out for living, and then for saving, and then for giving. This was the rich man's plan. He was going to put everything in the barn. So technically saving first, except that his whole purpose was to live off of it for the next several years. His plan was to spend it all down on easy living. This order keeps our hearts captive. We're wrapped up in this money for ourselves. But when we're managing, when we're taking care of something for someone else, something that we don't own, but we're tending to for a season, don't we often take much better care of it than our own stuff? Aren't we more intentional about the choices we make with something that belongs to someone else? So what if we intentionally reordered this plan with the money that ultimately will not be ours in the end? What if we give, save, live? What if the first transaction you make each month is a generosity transaction? I don't even care how much it is or where you give it, $1, $5, $100. Can you take it right off the top and let it go? If you don't already do this and you try, you start, it will feel different, I promise you. You will notice a change. It might even be scary. It might be uncomfortable. It might be exhilarating and liberating, but it will feel different within you. And that's your reminder that you are exercising a different muscle. You are working on generosity. And then after that transaction, save. What do you need to plan for? What is coming your way that if it hits the bank account, you will be in trouble, or it will at least keep you from doing other necessary things? Save next. Build up your margin. Because do you know the beauty of margin? Yes, it's stabilizing for you. It allows you to absorb unanticipated expenses. But remember, these aren't just bigger and bigger barns for us. Margin also makes space for us to give when the need arises. If we're not strapped and a family member needs a car repair or a local nonprofit holds a fundraiser or your church presents an opportunity to support a ministry, then you have the margin to say yes to those generosity moments. Just this last week, I had a good friend and colleague get the amazing news that the adoption they'd been waiting on for so long was going to come through. And they took baby Oliver home with them on Wednesday morning. They're over the moon. Of course, adoption comes with a lot of expenses that not every family can fund themselves, so a blessings account had been set up for them, and I was so happy for them. I wanted to respond generously, but I thought the budget might be too tight this month. Maybe I could spare like 50 bucks. But when I looked at the numbers, and because I try to be diligent in saving and creating margin, I was able to send $250 instead. And that may sound like a lot to some, that may sound like not much at all to others. The point is not the amount. The point is that it feels wonderful to be able to say yes to the needs and the celebrations in other people's lives, those people that I love. It is freeing to be able to give the gift and not worry that I am losing something because it was already set aside as margin. So it doesn't feel like loss. It feels like gain. Give, then save, and then live. Then use what is needed for the day-to-day costs of living. Yes, they're high these days, I know. The dollar amounts in each of these categories is going to be different for every single one of us, but it's the order that matters. Because when give and save come first, we're much more careful about what we spend to live. We're not quite as frivolous. We don't make impulse buys as much because we've done something better with that money already. We have reordered in such a way that reminds us that not all that comes our way belongs to us. We will have something meaningful to show for what has come our way. Our hearts begin to break free. This reordering is directly linked to perhaps Jesus' best known principle on money. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus is talking about treasure and to stop storing up worldly treasures, but to think instead about the kinds of treasures that transcend this material life. And he summarizes with Matthew 6:21, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Wherever your money is going, that's where your heart will go too. That's what you'll think about the most. That's what you'll worry about the most. That's what you'll end up spending even more money on. Your heart follows your treasure. Why? Because they are bound together, tied, captive. So when we take our treasure and the first thing we do is give some of it away, guess where our heart is going to go? It's going to start breaking free. It's going to move outside ourselves. Instead of telling ourselves that whatever we don't keep is loss, we start to understand and believe and experience that what we don't keep will set us free. Money matters in our lives. We're not going to know a world without it. But we don't have to use it the way the world tells us to. We get to decide how it matters to us and what we do with it because we want to take Jesus' money talks seriously. We do not have to remain captive to greed. We get to practice a different set of exercises that give our money less and less control over us and give our hearts more and more freedom. It is a way of generosity that Jesus teaches, a way of turning values upside down as he models, a way of freedom that the world does not know and cannot offer. And at the end of all of this, we cannot think our way into generosity. We can only act our way in. It's the giving that changes us. It's the letting go that sets us free. Will you pray with me? Generous God, you have created us to be generous people. Where we have lost our way, guide us once again. Where we have built bigger barns, unlock the doors of our hearts. Where we have believed that all that comes to us belongs to us, teach us to ask, what will I have to show for all that comes my way? Free our hearts from their captivity to greed, in the name of the one whose life was lived and given to set us free. Amen.